There you go. There you go.
Leaving the area. Oh, you're right, okay. Here is good for me?
Yeah, you're fine. Oh, you're fine right there. Okay. Mr. Gaskins, would you please state your full name?
Robert E. Gaskins. Middle name, Eugene.
Miss Lyle, will you please state your full name?
Paula C. Gaskins Lyle.
Okay, and where were you born?
I was born in Scranton, Pennsylvania.
In what year?
1929.
And where were you born?
Scranton, Pennsylvania. Okay. In 1935.
And what year did you come to the Falls Church area?
1939. 10 years later. The whole family moved down here.
Okay. So you can put the same. Yeah.
Okay. And how many siblings were there?
In my family?
Yes.
In my individual family?
Yes.
Okay. Four. Two. Okay. I'm sorry. Two. A girl and a boy.
Okay. Your brother and sister, correct?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay. And what were your parents?
Wait a minute. Excuse me. When you said sibling, are you talking about my mother and father?
No.
My individual family.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. Because it's two. My wife, my son and daughter.
I'm sorry. No. How many brothers and sisters did you have?
Okay. that's what I wasn't sure.
Okay.
It's four in the family.
Okay.
Two boys and two girls.
Okay. And what were your parents' names?
Percy L. Gaskins, his father. And mother's name is Mary J. Richards Gaskins.
Do you remember what brought you to the Falls Church area?
Not particularly. They just wanted to move back home, that's all. Then my mother was born here in Falls Church, see, so she...
I think the main thing that brought them back here was the Depression.
Okay.
Because it was during that time,
mm-hmm.
and my mother was not. Well, she was a beautician in Scranton.
She worked at home.
Yeah, but she worked at home. But and my dad drove for the AT&T company. He was one of those
truck driver,
and you know, jobs just fell through, problems and whatnot. And my mother was born here in Falls Church, Virginia. So, and my dad's home is up in Belle Plaine, Virginia, about 12 miles inside of Front Royal. And so I think they felt that they might do better by coming to this area to find work and, you know, just bring the family here.
Yeah, mother was a home wife, and
yeah.
She didn't do any work at all. Dad was the one that did the most of the work, and of course he once he came here, then of course he found a good job.
Mm-hmm.
Well, found a better job,
mm-hmm.
worked for one of the hotels in D.C. until he got another job at the Union Station where he worked mm-hmm. until he retired from.
But she was a beautician on up until I was born.
Yeah, well, when I said that she didn't go out to work, she worked at the home, at the house. She was a beautician,
uh-huh.
yeah.
Okay.
And of course, so once we moved here and the war started, well, then Dad went to the service, and then she did get a job in the government and worked just until Dad came back from service.
And what branch of the service? Was it just
he was in the
Army.
Okay. Yeah, transportation,
okay.
part of the Army.
That was World War II.
Mm-hmm. As a matter of fact, it's around the time where they were only taking certain ages, and Dad's at the age limit that they weren't taking. Plus, he had four kids, mm-hmm. and they weren't taking those with four kids, and I think it was 37, something like that. There, and his birthday was about a month later, but they took him anyway.
Okay.
And he had several brothers who some didn't have any. He was the only one.
Yeah,
he had four children, and he was drafted.
And they didn't go in at all.
Can you tell me about your education when you came to Falls Church? What your school was like, your elementary school?
In Falls Church?
Yes.
Yeah, I went to a two-room school down here on Annandale Road. At that time, it was called Shree Street. Teachers were Mrs. Lola Saunders, taught one of the rooms, which is one through three, I think. And Mrs. Emily Henderson, who was the principal, she taught the others from four through seven.
You call them Miss Nellie.
Yeah, Miss Nellie is what we call them. And she was, of course, the wife of Dr. E.B. Henderson. And schooling was, as far as we were concerned, we had a lot of fun. We had to go to school down there the entire day. And matter of fact, my mother went to the same school down there. Mrs. Henderson taught her and her sisters and all also. So therefore, she's well known to the area. As a matter of fact, she's the only teacher most likely in that here at that time.
But they had been to school in Pennsylvania. So when they came down here, they were way ahead of any schooling that was provided. They were so far advanced.
Yes, Grand Pennsylvania. As a matter of fact, my brother and I were the only blacks in the school up there in Dunmore County, Pennsylvania. Dunmore, Pennsylvania. So we moved down here. I think I was in fourth grade, something like that, when I moved down here, 10 years old. And we were 2 years ahead of the kids down here. Mm-hmm. So he and I both skipped two grades and went on to the sixth. I went to sixth, and he went to the seventh. And of course, I had 2 years in school then before I went to Manassas.
How did you find the difference from being in schools in Pennsylvania, where you were the only two black students to coming to this two-room school in Falls
Well,
Church?
In Pennsylvania, it was a rough road because since we were the only two blacks up there, and during the time that Joe Louis, I don't know if you heard about Joe Louis, the black heavyweight champion back in the days of the late 30s, I'm sure he had. But anyway, it was a time that he was just coming in, and of course, they had some white champs who were good. But when Joe Louis came through, he was beating all of them. So when we started school, the kids wanted to fight with my brother and I. So we were in different classes and different grades. I was a grade under him, since he was a year older than I. And every day at lunchtime, they'd have a fight for us. And of course, when we first started, we went home crying, both of us, you know. And that during the time, my mother was pregnant with my sister. And her sister was staying up there with us, Evelyn Cannon. And she got on his boat and said, "You come home crying next time, Mama, we'd both be both of your iron parts," and send it back. So she said, "When you go to school, you better learn how to fight." And from then on, we went to school, we started fighting, you know. And every day, like I said, lunchtime, they had a fight for each of us, you know, myself. And of course, he had his fight too. And it was always in the bathroom. And how then we'd be carrying on and fighting and fighting. And pretty soon we started prevailing. Mm-hmm. And when the bell rang, guess what? Everybody started running back to class. And that's the way it was. You know, we had to fight every day in school. Other than that, there, the schooling was okay. Mm-hmm. During this around that time, too, my brother and I used to sing a lot. And he had a heck of a voice, and they enjoyed hearing him sing. So in school, they put him on a loudspeaker, and he would sing pieces, you know, on a loudspeaker for the entire school. Mm-hmm. And also when we got home in the neighborhood, we were the only, you know, it wasn't the two black families in the neighborhood. We were surrounded with Italians, Greeks, Polacks, and all, and of course, the girls, older girls, you know, we were around six and seven, five and six, and of course, they were teenagers, and they all wanted us to sing for them. They'd be sitting on the fences around us, and we started singing together, duets, you know, and we'd sing for the girls, you know, and my mother was a real friend with the Italian family next door. As a matter of fact, two of them on both sides, the Bossies and Amelia's, and she kind of adopted us, you know, and my sister. And she used to make Italian food for us every day, you know, Italian bread, and bring them over to the house. But other than that, there, in the neighborhood up there, we had a hard time going to stores and all, because certain families, especially the Polacks, you know, they didn't care for us in the neighborhood. So we go to the store, we had they would get on us, and we'd come home crying, of course. And my father, he got tired of that. When we came through the alleyway crying, he would shoot out the back door and go and find out who it was. When he found out, I don't want to say what happened to him, but they didn't bother us anymore. But that's where it just like it wasn't as bad. We didn't have as bad a time here as there, because you're right in the middle of the neighborhood of the only black in the neighborhood. We had a harder time getting along with the children, even at school. And but when it came to Falls Church, it was a different story. See, we knew, we found out that where our place was, we couldn't mingle with the whites, and of course, mm-hmm. it was a different kind of situation.
And how did you, being so young, how did you react to that? Did you understand? Or?
Well, it was told to us when we got down here, you know, that what we could do and what we couldn't do. Certain stores we couldn't go, and we found that we couldn't go up into the center of Falls Church and sit at any of the drugstore fountains and order anything. We had to order from a certain side. Once we got it, we had to leave. Couldn't go to the theaters down here or anything like that. Up in Pennsylvania, we could go to the theaters. I don't know if we had to, I think we had to sit in a certain place, though. Then the father used to take us to the movies on certain days of the week. I mean, on Saturdays, and we see the westerns and all. But down here, we couldn't go to anything, you know, other than what we had. Of course, most of the blacks lived in one neighborhood, and that was this neighborhood right here. It was called Shreve Street. And that's where we, from Hillwood Avenue to Route 50. That's where the entire black neighborhood was. And, of course, on the other side of Route 52. Now, of course, there was a few blacks up in Falls Church, East Falls Church, Rectors, and well, so some other, a few others up in that area.
Tenants, West Falls Church. You know, Mr. Henry Taylor had a store right here.
That's right.
Next to Bunny Gibson.
That's right. They didn't have...
The street.
A few of the Hendersons were in the city of Falls Church.
Okay.
Yeah, most of them. E.B. Henderson lived up here on the... South Washington Street.
Right. It wasn't a city at that time,
no,
though.
No,
it was just in that particular neighborhood.
Okay.
But it was the city limits, though.
Yeah.
And Mrs. Henderson, I think it was related to him, she had stores on the side of going up to Seminole Falls Church. And
another thing that our mother, my mother and I, we would sit and talk a lot about how things used to be. And she said that as far as the education, when they were going to school, you know, a lot of, I don't know if they were coming from books that were written that way or they didn't get enough information, but she talked about a time when the teacher in teaching told them that no black people fought in the Civil War. And they came home and told her. And she says, that's not true. And she told them just who had in her family. I'm trying to think if it was some of Papa's brothers or Grandpa, I don't remember who, but they did fight in the Civil War. There were some black soldiers in the Civil War. Definitely. But you know, the teachings in that area, I don't know if I guess I do. The books historically were not fully written about the total of what happened at those times. It was selectively written.
It was nothing about blacks,
yes.
About what happened in the
and
past.
And so when they went back, and told that, teacher was amazed, you know. But of course, when you come down to an area where there are blacks, and you know, historically, we were getting more information than would have been given had we stayed in that environment, as far as blacks were concerned.
Where did you attend middle school?
There was no middle school.
Okay.
We went straight from the little two-room school here to Manassas, because there were no black high schools in this area here. We had to go to Jenny Dean, which is located in Manassas, Virginia, in Prince William County. Now, of course, there was only seventh grade here, and that grade started ninth, we skipped the eighth grade, went straight from seven to nine at Manassas. And so therefore, another grade that we skipped, you know. Because when I graduated, I was 15 years old when I graduated from high school.
That was different for me, because I'm 6 years younger than you.
Okay. How was it for you then?
When I came, I was just 5 years old. And so my mother, knowing what the situation was here, taught me how to read before I started the school. You know, she got all the little first grade in the premise on. And she just decided that it would be better if I did not start in school here, because my birthday was in October, and it was the 24th of October, meaning that I would have had to stay out of school a whole year before I could attend, and she knew I was too advanced for that. That would have put me back even farther. So her older sister lived in Washington, D.C., in Northeast, and she asked if I could just stay there and go to elementary school, you know, come home on the weekends. So that's what I did. I went to the Charles Young Elementary School in Washington, D.C., which was considered one of the best schools, elementary schools, in the district. And I went there and finished there in the sixth grade. And I was due to go to Brown Intermediate, which they called junior high school at that time. But I wanted to come back and live at home and go to school. So at that particular time, I would have to go to seventh grade. They had built a new school here at that time. And that was James Lee School, which is now a big recreational center down here. So I went there in the seventh grade. But there again, I was so far ahead of them that, you know, it was boring. I what they were teaching there, I had learned in the fifth grade. Mm-hmm. Because the schools in the district at that time were wonderful schools. You know, the system over there isn't so great now, but they were great schools. And so a lot of times, you know, the kids weren't understanding when the teacher was up there teaching, and I knew exactly how things were taught me. So I would ask if I could explain. I said, well, I understand that, and I thought that if they could get it the way I got it, because the way she was explaining it, if I didn't know any better, I wouldn't have known either. It's just like anything else. You have some good teachers and others that do the best they can, but, you know, they don't actually get it across in the way that some others can. So that was really fun for me, because whenever there was something, she would say, well, maybe Paula can get up and tell you about her experience in doing this. And so that's what I did in the seventh grade most of the time. No, I was just trying to, you know, children to children usually can relate better than, you know, adult to children.
Right.
So, but my first year at Manassas, they had an eighth grade. That was their first year.
Yeah, that's right. That's when they started eighth grade.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So when I went there, I actually went into eighth grade, which was, you know, was a fun time. But they had some good teachers there, and then there were some not so good teachers, and I did very well, you know, I really attribute all of that to that I started out in a very good school, and I think that's what a lot of it has to do with, you know, if you've gotten that good base, you can go on. So I didn't do any skipping like they did, but I came out the top of my class. So it was a good experience, you know, but it was not a joy to have to travel so far to go to school. And I came out in 1954, and then in 55, that's when the first black high school was opened here for black students, and that was Luther Jackson.
Yeah, when I came out of elementary school, it was 1841, I think it was, and I went to Manassas. And of course, as I say, you know, they had to catch the bus up there. Obviously, the bus had come through around, about 7 in the morning. We had to get up by daybreak, you know, catch the bus, and then go to Manassas. And the buses, like orange crates, that's what they were like. They had the yellow buses like now, but they're built like crates. That's what the blacks had. The whites had that the yellow bus that they have now. Yeah. But then, of course, going to Manassas every day and come back, you took a chance because sometimes the bus would break down. And we'd get to school on time, but coming back home was another story. We'd leave school on time, and the bus would break down about halfway home. And at that time, they had no services that would come to the bus. The bus, they had a tow would come and pick the bus up, grab it, and take it to the shop, and the kids would be right on the bus. And we had to stay in the shop until they fixed the bus. So sometimes we get home about 1 o'clock in the morning. So there you have the kids going out 7 in the morning and coming back sometimes 1 in the morning. You have to get up the next morning again, 7 o'clock, to go back to school. And that's where it was for 4 years, going back and forth in Manassas. You know, you get to school on time, but coming home, you never knew what would happen. Might be a flat tire or something else like that there. And of course, when they took it to the shop, they take the time fixing because they had other buses to take care of also. And one time, and of course, at that time, since they had the black drivers for us, you know, because those were the ones that went to school up there or either lived in the area, driving home from Manassas, when you come in contact with one of the other buses, they start racing, trying to find who's going to get home first. And that's where it was. Coming down there, boy, and all of we're on that cheering like mad, yelling, come on, come on, you know. And one time it was going so fast, the whole top of the bus just peeled right on back. Like, that's where the bus peeled right on back. Yeah. And of course, at that time, they had to get another bus for us. But that's where it was going back and forth, Manassas. We enjoyed going to Manassas, but the bus ride, we didn't care for too much, actually.
And they really weren't very selective about the drivers.
No,
they
weren't.
The buses for the black children.
Because they were reckless.
Not selective at all. I experienced some terrible times on that bus that I was coming back on. And one time, the driver just stopped in the middle of the street and decided he wasn't going to drive any farther. And he got out and got a ride with a friend. And there we were with the fellas on there saying, give me a chance, I'll drive. And we had to, it really wasn't a good thing, but there was one guy on there who was, we knew that he could be trusted. But his parents, one of his parents was a school teacher. They held some pretty high positions here in Fairfax County. And he said, if I drive this bus home and my mom or my dad finds out that I drove it, he said, I'll be in terrible trouble. But we told him that we'll stand up for you. We'll help you. So out of a lot of coaxing, and some of the girls were crying and whatnot, because we just didn't know what was going to happen, he drove the bus and took each one of us to our stops. And when my mother found out what had happened, she just had to hit, and so that driver was taken off. That driver who was permanent.
Right.
But there was I think it was anyone as long as they were black, who wanted to drive those buses to get us there and bring us back. I don't think they did anything like background checks or you know, you had to certify anything. I think they felt as long as you got the money.
Yeah, as long as you had a driver's license to drive a bus.
That was not a good situation. Mm-hmm. It was a very bad situation.
They had all
kinds
of drivers.
Very scary situation. And they just were not accountable.
Mm-hmm. What were some of the social activities you did outside of school within the community?
Since we could only go no further than the community right here, this mm-hmm. the strip, a lot of the kids had house parties, and that's where we lived up in the house parties, and
hay rides.
Yeah, hay rides, right? And of course,
in the hall.
Oh yes, yes, they had a hall up here Costner Lane, and this house up there now where the Gaskin, there's no relation to us. Okay. It used to be Oddfellows Hall. Was it Oddfellows mm-hmm. Hall? Yeah. Mm-hmm. And on Saturdays, they would have movies up there and stuff like that there. And when they started having the movies, they used to have cereals to bring the people up there, and then, of course, a regular movie afterwards. That was one of the main things that everybody looked forward to in the community as a whole, because there's nothing else going on. As far as individual kids, they had house parties, you know, kids in a certain one, especially down in not far from James Lee School. As a matter of fact, it's James Lee Lane.
School Lane.
Yeah. Mr. Alan Saunders had a beer joint down there, actually. And of course, his daughter mm-hmm. lived in a house on the corner. And of course, his wife is the one that taught school. The lower grades, acting first through third, and she had quite a few house parties in that, you know, mm-hmm. in the evening, and that's where we'd go down and have a party. But my mother would only let us come in, stay out as late as 10 o'clock. She was very strict with us at that time, and we lived up on Broad Street. When we first came to Falls Church, we lived on Scipio Lane with my grandmother, mm-hmm. but then after we finished high school. Elementary school, they finally found a place on Broad Street there. She rented from Maddie Gunry's. It's an insane asylum up here on the side there, and she had a place up here on the side that she rented to my mother. So therefore, that's when we used to catch the bus from up there on about halfway between the Center Falls Church and East Falls Church. It's a good mile to walk from there to down here. End of School Lane. And of course, parties, she used to let us go down, my brother and I go to parties at night there, as long as we both came back together. And we had to get back by 10 o'clock. And of course, my brother, he was a lover around that time, too. He's a year ahead of me, but he was the dancer, he could dance. I couldn't dance, you know, I slow drag. But Jitterbug, and of course, all the girls wanted him down at the party, see, so. If I couldn't go, he could go. So we used to, she let us go down to the parties there. And say, no, just be back by 10 o'clock. Mm-hmm. Well, of course, me, see, part of it boring to me. I went down because he couldn't go if I didn't go. And they looked forward to him, you know. But the boy was hard-headed. When it got close to 10 o'clock, he didn't want to leave. Mm-hmm. And I said, of course, I used to tell him, say, well, you know, I'm going. I can be back a certain time. Well, we had a very good understanding, because I said, I tell you, well, you know, I'm leaving, but I'll be waiting for you. And I'd walk all the way from James Lee School up to Center Falls Church, mm-hmm. and then hit Route 7, and then walk all the way down home, halfway to East Falls Church to go home. And of course, I'd take my time going. And when I got, I guess about just before I got to the lane, I hear him whistle way back in. And of course, I whistle, let him know I'm there. Mm-hmm. And that he'd be running, and we'd meet, and then we'd go up the lane there together, so we got all the time. But that was the only kind of, that was our social. And of course, we had a lot of fun, we looked forward to that there. Plus, I was very sports-minded, my brother was also, and had a playground down here in James Lee, where a lot of guys would meet in the afternoon and evening. We'd played football, baseball, basketball. You couldn't go anywhere else. We couldn't get to, the white kids had a good diamond up here, mm-hmm. and we couldn't go up there. So we used to fix up something looking like a basketball court, you know, old basket mm-hmm. with the rim on it, and knock the bottom out of it, just have just a round metal rim, and put it on a post, and get a paper bag and tie it up there and made it like a basketball, and that's how we played basketball at that. And also football, same way. Make a paper bag and tie it like football. And had our football games, and horseshoes and stuff like that. That's how we enjoyed ourselves. It's coming up.
They were very popular, too. They had a lot of guys that would come up.
Yeah, come up to our house, too. And
pitch horseshoes.
And play football.
Play football. And do all of those great things.
We got along with the guys around there because even though we couldn't come out, they just called us prissy and all because we couldn't come out and stay out with them. But we stayed out as long as we could with them. And that's why we were very popular. Of course, my brother, he was a different situation because, like Sensei said, he was a girl's man. They didn't care too much about anybody messing with the girls down in Falls Church. Mm-hmm. So he had to fight a lot of time with them, with these guys here to prove himself. And he was a pretty good fighter. You know, he handled his dukes pretty good. So he didn't have too much trouble with them, but he had to fight quite a bit to make sure that he was accepted in the community. You know. So we were brought up fighting in Scranton, Pennsylvania. Well, it wasn't too much different for us fighting down here, so if we had to fight down here, we kind of held ourselves pretty good. You know. Even myself in elementary school, they had one guy that was pretty good in this area here. He's pretty fast with his fists. And at school, they wanted to find out how good we were. So they had me down there fighting him. And of course, that was the only guy in Falls Church that was faster than me with his fists. And he was pretty fast. But we're all good friends, you know, and that's how we grew up. And of course, my brother, he was fast as his fist, too. And of course, he was taller than I was. And they found out there's one guy here also that was pretty good. But they had him fighting him, and they found out that Leonard was kind of pretty good, too, and he held himself. So that's how we got along with the guys here in Falls Church and made good friends and all. So we had a good life here coming up here.
Were there different experiences for the girls socially? What were some of the things that you all did?
Well, because I was much younger, you know, I really didn't have a lot of things open for me because my mom was very strict. Mm-hmm. So it was quite hard for me growing up here in Falls Church with the rest of them because I was not allowed to attend a lot of the parties. If she didn't feel that they were properly chaperoned, I could not go. And at school, you know, it was quite strict for me because even hay rides, I could only go if Bob went. And if she heard that anything went wrong one time, that was discontinued for me, you know.
I mean, no matter what the plan, if they give them 10, you have a hard time about signing that form.
You're kidding me.
Yeah, can I have your keys?
It's in my hat.
The old sign that has to be there for her to sign.
Or, and then the same guy. Too bad I can't go there.
So, in Falls Church, there were a very few things that I participated in growing up. Because I had gone to school in the district, I made more friends there. And I lived with my cousins whose home were in the district. And so, as I went along in school, you know, I made some friends there too, but I was limited in going and, you know, to parties and no dances. And I went up here to the Fellows Hall to the movies at times. And then the old church, Galloway, and we had a parish hall. They started having movies on weekends. And so, of course, being my church, this being my church, well, you know, there was no problem with my coming to Galloway to the movies. You know. And then as I got a little older, this is my first year at Manassas. I became good friends with the Deskins, and they boy, who was around my age, that's what they called him, his name was Jesse Deskins. He had a Jeep. And so, you know, he would take me to, it was okay because she knew his parents. Mm-hmm. They all grew up together. So I could go to D.C. to the movies, like midday. And of course, over in Washington, you could only go to the Republic, the Lincoln, and the Howard Theater.
All on 7th Street.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we were
limited. No, all on U Street.
U Street, yeah. We were limited, you know, at that time. So I did that occasionally, I just had to be satisfied with that. I had, you know, friends who, and she never stopped anyone from coming. It didn't matter if they wanted to come to visit and whatnot, you know, that was fine. So I learned to live through all of that because I knew how I was raised and I knew what I was not allowed to do. And she would always sit down and talk to us, so there was no arguing with the parents about what you can or cannot do. That was just a no-no. Mm-hmm. So I was ostracized a lot because I couldn't, you know, the girls really gave me a hard time. Because, but it wasn't my doing. It was that I was just not allowed to go out and be into a lot of the things that a lot of the others, you know, were able, because they grew up together, they were closer together, and my life was just a little bit different.
As far as going to the movie, that was one of our other pleasures too, because as we grew up, since we're older, we could catch the bus here and go to the district. Mm-hmm. Since it's the only movie we could go to, and get off at 11th and E. And of course, then at that time they had streetcars. And of course, we'd ride on up to U Street to the theaters, whichever one we wanted. As long as we got back at reasonable time, and then we came out of the movies. And instead of catching a streetcar, you know, around that time, we'd walk from U Street all the way back to 11th and E. Mm-hmm. That's quite a way to walk, you know. Mm-hmm. But during that time, you could do that in the evenings. You didn't have to worry about nothing happening to you. That was good days, you know. We'd walk all the way back to 11th and E. Catch the bus back to Falls Church, and that's how we enjoyed ourselves also.
But you know, the Methodist Church also provided a lot for the youth. Mm-hmm. They still do. And I was really involved with the church, this church. So during the summer, you know, I was a member, not just during the summer, but the Methodist Youth Fellowship was an organization for the young people in the Methodist Church. And I would get the opportunity to go away to the camps and whatnot that they provided. And there was where I had the chance to really meet a lot of kids coming from Methodist churches, you know, all around in this particular district. And the church, you know, we had, during the summer, our church had, what do they call it? But they have a name for it now that wasn't the same. It was like a Bible during the summertime. Marlene and them have it here.
Vacation Bible School.
It was Vacation Bible School. But they call it a little different. But when I was younger, Mrs. Leora Robinson, who used to live in our community, was a school teacher. She would always have it up. And it was like 2 or 3 weeks long. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But here, it's much shorter. And that was a time, too, where all any of the kids in the neighborhood who wanted to come and be a part of that. It was a really great thing because it was like all day. Mm-hmm. And so that was a good thing, too, for the summer time, you know, being a part of the church organizations and helping around. And my grandmother was a big church worker here. And so whenever she had anything, I was always brought in to help and to do. So I was kept busy.
I'm going to move on to the civil rights issue. Do you remember any of the leaders or any of the families that were prominent in the community?
In this community here?
Yes.
Oh, yes. Mr. Ollie Tenner. Mm-hmm. E.B. Henderson, of course. Mr. Alan Saunders. Mm-hmm. Those are the three main ones around the time when I came up. Ollie Tenner, Alan Saunders, and E.B. Henderson. Those three ones. Yeah, this is Mr. Alan Saunders was Mrs. Lola Saunders' husband, who was taught, of course, Mr. E.B. Henderson. He's related to us also, distant cousin. And Mr. Arlen Turner lived up on Broad Street. He taught over in D.C., a school teacher. I can't think who else, you know.
Well, he also dealt in real estate, and he helped people a lot in legal matters, too.
Oh, yeah. Well, I was just thinking about the three main...
Reverend Costner...
Well, Reverend Costner,
was really involved. He was the pastor of Second Baptist Church. I'm trying to think of who.
I can't think of that. And I know that those are the main three that ran at the time we came up here, who were the leaders in Falls Church.
How did you and your family find out about local news or things that were going on in the community?
Through the church.
Through the church and word of mouth from citizens.
Yeah, a lot of the citizens. Mm-hmm. And then, too, but it was mostly in the church. Mm-hmm. There were so many people who fed information about what was happening through the church.
Yeah, and Mr. Ollie Tenner also was a good relayer of information.
Yes, he was.
Anytime he got something that he felt that we should know, he related. So he was one of the main ones that relayed news, messages and of interest to the citizens of that area.
Mm-hmm. Can you describe the relationship between poor blacks, middle class blacks, and upper class blacks? Could you tell a distinction in the community? You don't have to name them, but just general.
Well, it's kind of hard to tell around that time, you know, of although there was a difference in some of the blacks, but as far as the actions and all, around that time I couldn't tell too much about the behavior actions, you know, about the different classes, because it looked like everybody kind of looked out for each other around that time. It's almost like a family situation. Everybody looked out for everyone's kids and what have you. So I really couldn't tell any difference. I don't know about Paula.
Oh, well, there was a difference, a big difference. I know I would ask sometimes, there would be some children that I would see once in a while, but they weren't really into everything that a lot of the others were into, and I see them occasionally. Some of them, I wasn't even aware that they were in Falls Church. There was a family that I found out there were 24 children, 24 of them, and they weren't living so well. They'd been around for a good little while. And, you know, I would wonder why I wouldn't see them even in church or, you know, just involved in the things that, you know, are going on around in the neighborhood. There were a few, because we were all in a community, just like he said, most of us didn't know too much about how much anybody had or what they didn't have. We just more or less were around together. But then there was a difference. There were a few who were less fortunate, very much so, who lived a certain way, and it was not a good thing. Now, as far as helping each other, there was a lady here in this community who just went out. She was above and beyond, and her name was we used to call her Miss Lou Pearson, Miss Hudson, Judy Hudson's mother. She did a lot for trying to bring the kids together and doing things like, and also Miss Nellie. They had the Girl Scouts. And wasn't there a boy? Who had the Boy Scouts?
Her husband.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, but Miss Hudson did a lot to try to help the kids to have something to do and to do things. She had a lot of children herself, mm-hmm. you know. But there were, just like in Girl Scouts, there were certain ones that weren't even a part of Girl Scouts. You know, so it wasn't, I don't know what it was. Sometimes it was distance because, like that piece of land up there that's Seven Corners. Mm-hmm. There were kids whose families owned that property up in there. The Foots, the Alexanders, mm-hmm. and whatnot. I'm sure they've told you about that. They owned that piece of land. And then there were kids that would live farther on, you know, that were down in other areas. And I don't know if it was Falls Church, they considered Peace Valley Lane Falls Church, or it was like a between
Falls. Peace Valley Lane, I think, was off of Falls Church, yeah.
Uh-huh. But, you know, we didn't all get together, you know, but we went to school. And in going to school, since we all were bused to one place for school, that was the time that we really got a chance to meet kids who were from, because some people were bused from Alexandria to Manassas. Gum Springs, Alexandria, Seminary. You know, we got a chance to meet a lot of kids, and in doing so, I found out that there were some black families who were doing very, very well. So, you know, some of those kids came from really, you know, our family was rich as far as love, happiness, being there for us. We didn't have a lot of money, but what we had was all of what was necessary to bring you up to be a well-rounded family, you know. And some of these kids didn't have all of that, you know. So a lot of them sort of came up the really rough way.
I think it's kind of hard to differentiate the answer that you just gave.
Yeah.
Because of the distance at all. There, just like you're
yeah.
talking about, this family was 24. And well, they lived on the other part of Falls Church.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, we didn't know how they were living, you
yeah.
know, as we're coming up. We knew there was a lot in the family because
right.
uh-huh. We knew the father and the mother, and we knew they had a large family.
Mm-hmm.
But we never saw them all. As a matter of fact, I only came in contact with about two or three of them who went to school with me a minute at James Lee. So, therefore, it's kind of hard to tell, you know.
And the people in Halls Hill sometimes... there would be some repercussions coming from, you know, Halls mm-hmm. Hill is right here in Arlington.
Yeah, Glebe Road, in that area, Glebe Road.
You know, and sometimes, you know, they had the baseball games and whatnot, you know, there was some rivalry.
Oh, yeah, a whole lot of rivalry, you know, of
yeah.
course, fights and all, too, because different areas.
generally speaking, you know, we did pretty good.
Could you describe the relationship between blacks and whites? For instance, were there any examples of racial conflicts in the area?
Well, as I said, we're coming up, you know, we were teenagers, and we loved sports, and we were good in sports in this area here, the black kids. As a matter of fact, one of the fastest guys that come up with me here was Deskins, William Deskins. You know, he and I around the same age. And we had our baseball team, fat football team, of course, and basketball team. So we'd get up our own little football team up here, and we'd play different kids, different teams from different areas, Bill's Cross, Shirley, Alexandria, and all. And the Fairfax High School, only white kids could go there. Mm-hmm. And Fairfax High School around that time was right here on Hillwood Avenue, or up here where the new apartments are. And they had a heck of a team, football team. And, of course, that their field was on the right side. Where it's right now, it's all fixed up there for soccer on the right side. That's where their football team was. And we used to go up there and watch them every now and then. So they heard that we were pretty good in our little team we had there. And they would let us come up there and use their field sometimes, you know, and play. And one time while they were watching it, they wanted if they could get a little scrimmage with us. So we said, yeah, we didn't mind. Of course, they had their uniform. We didn't have the uniform. Just some of the guys, a few of the guys had cleats to play with. So we said, yeah, we liked it. We thought we had a pretty good team. Mm-hmm. And of course, I was a quarterback at that time. And Deskins was our running back, was good. My brother was fullback, and he's fast. And we had two guys on end, Burries, who were real good guys. So we played one side, and we played the guys that were on the team. And we beat them so bad it was unmerciful. I think we beat them about 48-0. Mm-hmm. And of course they were embarrassed, you know. So they got the alumni to schedule a game with the next time, because they didn't like the way that the game went. So when the alumni came, we played them also one Saturday, and Bird was about 6'3" on our team, 6'2", Ronnell Bird. And he hit a guy one time that was coming through the line, and he just put his arm on the collar around the neck, and we thought he'd killed him. Mm-hmm. And they had to call an ambulance on him for him. Mm-hmm. And we thought it would have some repercussion from that there, because it wasn't nothing done intentionally, but the guy was coming by him, mm-hmm. and he couldn't reach him, so he put his arm out like that there, and the guy's neck, his arm. Well, I think that game ended up, I think we beat them by 2 points, something like that, the alumni. Mm-hmm. But other than that there, you know, since they found out how good we were, there was no repercussion with the kids up there, because they got so then they wanted to play with us every now and then. So a lot of the guys in Foster knew some of the kids, and we got along very well with them. Yeah. Then the repercussion is older part of the race of Falls Church, you know, that didn't want to be involved with the kids. But the kids themselves, they seemed like they grew up pretty good together, you know, that the ones we came in contact with. Of course, there were some, you know, that you couldn't come in contact with because of the way it was. And of course, there's a lot of friction going on back and forth with certain people. And so that's why we stayed in our neighborhood, and we didn't go outside our neighborhood other than playing sports back and forth with the children.
Just have two more questions. One, what did you both go on to do after high school?
Well, when I graduated from high school, my brother and he wanted to go away to college. Well, I wanted to go away to college too, but my mother couldn't send both of us away to college because of financial problems and all. And he was oldest. He finished high school before I did, and he went to Hampton. And of course, when I graduated, I had to go to Howard, you know, and I didn't like that too well, because I wanted to go away, but it just couldn't afford it.
Right.
So I went to Howard, caught the bus to go to Howard. I think I went about a couple of semesters, and I said, no, I don't want that. So I just dropped out. Mm-hmm. So of course, he did finish Hampton, my brother did, yeah. And from there, I went to the service. From when I came out, I went to the service. I got a job, actually, and then I went to the service and served overseas. My brother, he graduated and went on to Korea as a lieutenant. And, of course, he was very fortunate to get out of there alive because he was on the front lines over there for the last, I think it was the last 3 weeks of fighting. He's right on the front line. And, of course, since I was in the service before him and overseas in the military, in the artillery unit, I wanted to go to Korea after I found he was there. I wanted to go there, too. But they weren't letting brothers go in fighting together at that time. See, only one part of the family. So my unit went on over to in Germany. And we thought that we might end up in Korea also because we were a good artillery unit, but we didn't. And after I served my time there, he said I came out and got a job in the government. And of course, I did pretty good because I was a good typist because I went in the service. I took up administration, personnel administration. And when I came back, I typed about 98 words a minute when I came out of service. So I got a job over in town. I went over, and signed up as a typist. And I was just fortunate at that time because when I signed up, they called from D.C. Superior Court, they need a typist right away. So I went on right over there. And they never hired me a typist when I got there. When I got there, they put me in Central Violations Bureau where the tickets in there, and then I went there as a bailiff. And from the bailiff, I moved up in the ranks as a chief of D.C. Of the District of Columbia and Traffic Branch and Criminal Division there. And that's when I retired 30 years as chief of D.C. of Traffic Branch and Criminal Division. So I did very well. Of course, my brother came out of college and went to the military service. And when he came back, he taught school in Massachusetts. That's where he is now. And he retired from the service and teaching.
We moved after I finished Manassas in 1953. A year before I finished, we moved to McLean.
Okay.
Yeah, I was in the service when they moved.
Yeah, and so I graduated in 54, and I wanted to be a biology major, so I went to GW for a while, but there again, my parents were struggling because they had just bought that home there, and my being in school, even though I was commuting, it was not, I could see it wasn't a good thing, so I took a government exam and went into the federal government, and went up through the ranks working for the Navy Department, so I got a very good position and retired from that position after 37 years working for the Navy, and I'm enjoying retirement. Yeah, got married and have a daughter, and she got married. She has granddaughter. Granddaughter. But all in all, I'm just glad that we were brought back to the area because my dad's from up in Virginia, and our grandmother, his mother, was a school teacher there, and they went to school a short time before under my grandmother's teaching. Mm-hmm. And the real joy is for us to even go there now at homecoming time. They call them all-day meetings up near Front Royal. And the elderly people there will still talk about our grandmother, mm-hmm. and, you know, how it was in school and how she taught them and the type of person she was, mm-hmm. and whatnot. So, you know, it's wonderful to have had parents, grandparents, and, you know, to be able to learn about them. Just like Scipio Lane down there, that's named from our great-grandmother's people. She was a Scipio. And my mother's home was right back in the
area. Yeah, right at the end of that lane.
Yeah, right back in here at Falls Church. So we learned a lot about Falls Church through my mom, mm-hmm. because she was here. She was born here. She was born here in 1908, mm-hmm. and she was raised here. And so we learned, we're good friends with the Tenors. They were just like, they're just like relatives to mm-hmm. us, because their parents and or grandparents or whomever were raised with my mother's people. Mm-hmm. So we were fortunate, because we were able to grow up around good people, great people, people who were very interested in the community, and they took an interest in the children. And it was like, if Mom and Dad weren't around to see what was going on, we might know the Miss Frances over there, or Miss Elmira Brent, or some of them, as we were traveling through, would see it. And we knew we'd better do what we were supposed to do. So we were blessed. Mm-hmm. We were really blessed. Because our younger sister, Claudia, lives here in Falls Church. And she's 6 years younger than I am. Okay. So, and of course, you know, her story would be something that she could relate to mm-hmm. 6 years after me. But all in all, I'm thankful we're still here at Park Galloway.
Yeah, I think we had good life, actually. Mm-hmm. Very good life. And that's why I like Falls Church myself. Mm-hmm. I've been here ever since we moved back down in 39. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of hard to pick up and move in another area, because I really like this neighborhood and everyone in this neighborhood. So that's why we bought the fair in Fall Church, and we stayed in this area here.
And they're a lot like family to us.
Yeah.
A lot of these families around, even though we may not be related, we're related in so many other ways, because we can talk about how things used to be, which is a great thing. I don't know if you've talked to any of the people up at Second Baptist yet, have you?
Some, we've talked to the Reverend there, and we've talked to a few people from the church.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
a lot of the children are still living here that go to the church mm-hmm. there too, that we were raised with.
Mm-hmm.
And this has been our family church ever since we moved back here in Falls Church, 39, just church here.
Would you mind telling me anything about your relative that was on the first chapter of the NAACP, the rural chapter? Anything that you can remember, just so that it's part of the history, when I can start the tape again.
Oh, I'm in
pain.
Okay.
I can't tell you nothing on that one.
Well, at least we can start with his name and just how he's related to you, and
okay.
we can go from there. Okay.
Grandpa, and I refer to him as Grandpa because that's the way Mother referred to him, but he was really our great-grandfather. His name was Daniel Richards. And when we were doing our history, we have historical books here and whatnot that we put together for a family reunion. But he... was the son of a slave master. And we don't know who his mother was, and that was something that I wish that we could have gotten, you know, from our parents, and I don't know that they even knew. But he moved here, and he used to live on Scipio Lane, up, you know, farther up into the lane, and he married Margaret Scipio, whose family, from what I can understand from the historical people here at Falls Church, that the Scipios were land barons here at Falls Church. So they lived there, and of course they had several children. whose names I can't remember, but we've got it all listed here. And he was, he's listed here in this book as having been one of the members. And by the way, this is a picture of one of his sons who remained here. And he was a linesman, and the people in Falls Church were very interested in this picture because they can't even relate to. They want to know where this is and who these people were. And I wanted to talk to Miss Dora before she died because I think she could, and I told her about it, and she wanted to see this picture. Mm-hmm. But anyway, he was one of the members here of getting this together for the NAACP. I don't know what I did. And as far as what he may have done as a part of the organization, we don't have too much information on. But he's listed here. He is, where is he? Daniel Richards, right here. So he was one of the, who was a part. So he was concerned enough to be there, to be a part of that, which was a good thing. Mm-hmm. He was a family person, and if any of these people were about at the time, maybe they could relate to some of the things that he participated in as being a part of the organization. But it was just great for me to see that he cared enough to be one of those people who were in the early stages of organizing the NAACP in Fairfax County in this chapter. But he was a wonderful person. My mom said that he was definitely a family person. Mm-hmm. He loved the grandchildren. He loved, of course, his children. And I can't remember the year that he died, but he's buried out here in this cemetery. He is. And he married Margaret Scipio. She's buried out here. And my grandfather is buried here, but my grandmother is buried up near where I am.
Yeah, grandfather would be this person right here.
Yeah. Our grandfather is buried out here.
He called him Papa.
William Richards.
William Richards.
Yeah. But it's just a wonderful thing to be able to have had the chance to talk and even know about him because we never saw him. Mm-hmm. We never saw him, but he was described to us, and my mom said that he had long white hair that hung down, you know, his back. So, and my granddad, one of his sons, was very, very funny. We remember him, and he could whistle. Mm-hmm. He could mark any bird. Yeah. He could.
Yeah.
Any bird.
Every one of them. That's how we could always tell he was coming when he'd come from work.
Yeah, that's just how he, you know, what he, and he was very, very friendly. I'm just sorry that we could not have learned more about them. But to me, this is a great thing within itself to know that he was a part of that. Because it's through that the NAACP that we have gotten to where we are right now, and we're hoping that we can do a little bit better. Falls Church now is so you can't really say that this is a black neighborhood anymore. You know, it used to be, but we're seeing some changes. You know, but there was a time that it was not a good thing to be walking Shreve Street at night.
Yeah, for whites. They didn't walk through here.
It wasn't a good thing for black women either to come through, because if they were in their cars and came through, they did some little nasty things, you know, but they were moving. They were on the move, things were, and then of course, I'm sure that they probably told you that when they had that, what was it, the centennial or anniversary or whatnot, and they tried to stop the black people from participating, you probably were told about that. It was Dr. E.B. Henderson that wrote this article, and he was instrumental in helping them to see that the black people here in Falls Church were just as important to Falls Church as the white ones, because of the heritage and what the black people had done. And he even went so far as to take the Foots and the Richards and certain other families, and he had gone back into their history and had talked about the connection of some of the Richards that he had taken back as far as one of the Indian tribes. And so he was very instrumental in bringing a lot of history. And I know my papers are someplace at home, because my mother had all that information. But he was very instrumental in helping everyone to know that we had a lot of historical value here in Falls Church, and that we should have the opportunity to be recognized in the same way as all of the others.
Well, I think that's a good place to start.